It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Kalila Sabra joins us, and I'm glad that we have her to follow up Josh, because we need somebody that's been over there, has some experience. Now, Kalila, I just want to let you know, Josh Rubner was just on in theoccupation.org, and, you know, we kind of got a beat on his effort to, well, you know, my perspective, and I'll share with you so that you don't get submarined here, is that I got you there, Kalila, right?
Right.
Okay. This is my perspective. Here we go. If you stop taking my money, if you protect the human rights of me not getting stolen from to begin with, there's no money going over foreign aid to Israel or anybody else and funding all these problems. That's my first perspective. And as we have people that come on the show and they'll say, we are spending our future indebtedness of our grandchildren badly, and we should steal from the next generation to do this noble thing over here, I'm like, you already lost a human rights argument because you're advocating stealing from me. So I just want you to know that right up front. But let's go ahead and go into where we need your perspective. As we have the United States involved in Israel's occupation, second-class citizen advocacy of apartheid of the indigenous people that were there, I'm wondering, you know, from a perspective of the people there in the Knesset, in the Israelis' legislature, of the politicians there, of the people that are in the Jewish community, are they in support of this, or do they have a choice? Are they just drummed out of the discussion? What's their advocacy?
Well, you know, to say that they don't have a choice, everybody has a choice, and at the end of the day, the power is with the people. If enough of the people that are given credibility and the legal right to exist in Israel were to stand up against their lawmakers, and the laws would change. Now, clearly they can see. I mean, for example, in this country, there were a situation where black people had the right on the back of the bus in the state of Israel. They're separate buses altogether. And those Israelis who are riding on the bus that are just meant for Jewish only, they could easily boycott those kinds of social situations that make one man superior and one man inferior. And
if you're getting on a bus and all of a sudden it blows up because a Palestinian was on there, I'm going, you know, I'd like to keep the Palestinians off. I get my own bus. I mean, I can see the want to die motivation, but you know, I want to know what's propagating these kinds of violence from the Palestinian. I mean, what is it that has them upset? What would placate the Israelis? Give me the situation.
That's the problem. Americans, they don't understand. They're not trying to understand what's making the Palestinians upset. And American media has historically used its powerful tools of bias and manipulation to describe Israeli military attacks against Palestinians as retaliation or for their self-protection. However, when one looks into the chronology of death in this situation, the truth turns out to be something totally different. Now, Israel has made a history of denying the massacre of the Palestinian people and their children. And if you look at the statistics, 124 Israeli children have been killed by Palestinians, and 2,441 Palestinian children have been killed. There is exactly one Israeli soldier that is currently being held by Palestinian by the Palestinians, but there are thousands of Palestinians being held as prisoners. 10,000 Palestinians are being imprisoned by Israel. So if it's easy to make a case accusing Palestinians of terrorism, but looking at these statistics, who's creating terror amongst those people over there? Now, do we really, with a horrific situation like this, isn't it kind of normal to assume that Arab resistance will continue? I mean, at the end of the day, don't those people have a right to defend themselves, especially when powerful countries like America choose to look the other way and ignore the statistics and the human price of being a non-Jew in an Israeli state? This whole thing about two-state solution, that's just another way of diverting attention from the fact that there is that democracy is not on the table, and that the childhood of tens of thousands of Palestinian youngsters is being lived from one trauma to the next, from horror to horror. Their homes are being demolished. Their parents are humiliated in front of their eyes. Soldiers storm into their homes viciously in the middle of the night, and tanks open fire on their classrooms. Criticism or negative commentary against the Israelis is the political euphemism for anti-Semitism. There is no way these people can win. They have no defense. They have no defense inside the state of Israel, and it appears they have no defense outside the state of Israel.
Khalilah Sabra works with U.S. Campaign to End Israeli Occupation, but she's also directing the Muslim American Society's Immigrant Justice and Legal Clinic. Tell me about that. Now, the Justice and Legal Clinic, where? Here in the U.S. or for Palestinians?
Here in the U.S. It's for all immigrants, but we do have a lot of Palestinians who have been filing for political asylum, and guess what? They're not in. And when they come here, they have nowhere to go, and it's very difficult for them to get political asylum. It's a no-win situation. You're going to stay there and die, or you're going to come here and try to get political asylum, and the chances are that you're not going to get it. You're going to be sent back to a country that doesn't want you. I mean, it's damned if you do, excuse me, but damned if you don't. There's got to be a humanitarian alternative for Palestinian people, and I don't care how many people are meeting at the White House. There's no real deal on the table that's going to guarantee that for them.
Well, I mean, what would be your solution?
Well, my solution first would bring all the partners to the table. And also, first of all, there should be some type of humanitarian monitoring situation there, which the Israelis have refused to have anybody there to monitor the situation so that the people could really understand what's really going on over there. And part of my solution would not be to bring people like Hosni Mubarak, like King Abdullah and the rest of them to the table when they don't have democracy in their own societies. How are they going to advocate for the Palestinian what they don't give their own people? I mean, the whole thing is ludicrous. Unless you have if you're not going to put any eggs in the cake, so to speak, the thing's not going to bake. And you can compare that. That's what's happening there. It's not going to happen unless you deal with the real facts on the ground, unless you deal with the facts that the Palestinians are oppressed, they're treated as second-class citizens, and that the people that are claimed to be representing the Palestinians really have no legitimate interest in their freedom.
Okay, so let's take a look at the timeline, a lot of this stuff. We're looking at peace talks. We hear about peace talks. Here come the peace talks. Obama's going to do peace talks right before midterm elections, okay? So I made an effort, I'm making an argument, getting some press time, getting some warm fuzzies, nice pictures, click, 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 and then what? What's the interest of the people involved? Tell me, who's at the table in this thing? Who's advocating for what?
Well, first of all, it's very difficult. I mean, as much as I respect the intentions or what I think are the intentions of the president, it leaves me a little bit in doubt that the legitimacy, and you can look at the timeline too. But the fact is American taxpayers, even though there's an election coming up, if he wants to sue the American taxpayers, he should let them know that they are no longer going to have to fund between 20 and 25% of Israel's defense budget, and that this money will be used to settle the problems here right now in the United States. Thanks to Congress, we pay half the cost of special Israeli research and development projects, even when the technology being developed is essentially irrelevant to our own military requirements. If the president wants to be legitimate, then he should deal with it from that perspective and not just bringing people from the Middle East that really have a vested interest in continuing the occupation instead of ending it.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm leading up to, is it seems to me all these problems that you're talking about is not, you know, even really a side effect of a lot of things. It's the intention. It's the goal. It's the perpetuation of this stuff. So I'm, you know, you can't fund, you know, a war program in Israel to
tell them not to make war.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like you're giving money to them because of the threat. So what happens if there's no threat? Well, we can't have that because we need the money to protect against the threat we created. Oh, more to talk about the Third Rail Israel with Khalilah Sabra in just a little bit here on Declare Your Independence. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, and taking a look at the Third Rail, Israel is, you know, an obligation I guess we got to go through at least every once in a while. Because from my perspective, Khalilah, I'm looking at this, and I have to raise my hand and ask a question. Am I allowed not to care? I go, you know, I want to be able to not care so much that I want to just not send my money out of my wallet, certainly not out of the country or my state or I choose my wallet. But, you know, I'm going this, all of these atrocities, and I can pick, you know, like, just about every country in Africa, all over Asia, Middle East, there's always some South America, Central America, Mexico. There's so much, you know, death and damnation and destruction and all kinds of stuff going on that, you know, I want to be able to choose what I do with my money based on my morality. And what's happening is I have advocates such as yourself that will come on and you'll point out the atrocities that are going on in various different parts of the world and saying this support from America is so bad that we have to rally against that so that we could use that money for other stuff. And I don't want there to be other stuff. I'm like, stop, protect the human rights of me. And whatever happens then, a lot of times you'll find that without our subsidy, without our getting in the way, without our being there fostering certain actions, holding up certain regimes, doing all the stuff that we in this peace process, always somebody goes to Washington from both sides meeting. That's a crock right there, as if we should be involved in it to begin with. So I'm until we can wrap our minds around what's fueling this. You know, it's going to, and if it doesn't happen there, it's going to happen somewhere else because they got F-16s to sell. You see my point?
Yeah. Yeah, when those, American taxpayers are paying for those F-16s, and then we have senior citizens that can't afford to pay for their prescriptions. We're so busy exporting the money of American taxpayers that we're not taking care of our own children in the schools here. We're not taking care of even soldiers that come back with their limbs blown off. We're not spending our money to take care of them. We're not spending our money to take care of children that whose parents don't even make a living wage.
Yeah,
we
see,
have all
this is
money to give somewhere else.
Khalilah, you're making my point. You know, it'll always be how bad it is that my money's being forced from me to go over there. And you point to, and you can point all over. I have people that, you know, have lived in Afghanistan. They do social work in Iraq. In fact, we sponsored a young girl that went you know, into Iraq and holding up our sign so she could go and bring back the message of these people in the villages. And as she leaves the village, it gets mortared and people she was talking to, you know, minutes before were killed. You know, so I'm just, I understand. And I'm, but to come back and say, but you're still going to advocate for the human right violation of me to take my stuff in order to redistribute and redirect and spend on fill in the blank, whatever, instead of allowing me to spend my money where I want. It's just, it just diminishes the claim of a human rights advocate. You see what I mean?
Yeah, because your money is not your money. Your money goes into a collective pot that the government spends to empower other people to use the funds that we need right here. And this is the—I mean, this is.
Wow,
the,
you're not going to get me off of that, Kalila.
You know, it is
my money.
And Congress spent billions of dollars of your money and my money to go to Iraq. After they killed Saddam Hussein, or after they captured Saddam Hussein, they could have come home. We didn't have to stay there. We didn't have any business there. We wasted billions of dollars. We put this country into recession. We eliminated jobs. We have people that became homeless while we were spending $1 billion for people to shoot other people. And we shouldn't have been there in the first place. We don't need to be in Israel facilitating their war factory with our money while our children are starving, while our people are poor, and while people are losing their homes. It doesn't make any sense, but we have failed to make our representatives accountable. They're like antiques up there in Washington, D.C. Once they get there, they don't leave.
I want to use this as an opportunity so as that we can find where we can overlap and agree. We agree that, you know, taking my money to go build weapons and to go kill people and break stuff and then pay to rebuild it after we broke it. I mean, that's just stupid. And, you know, this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm with you, sister. We're on the same page. But when I talk to advocates such as yourself that will latch on to issues like this, it's never, you know, we're going to advocate for the human right of the people here in the United States not being stolen from them to begin with by a government with a 45 to their forehead. It never goes there. It's always, well, yeah, it's a collective pot of money that we're saying, yeah, they can steal it from you. We just want them to spend it differently. And I'm going, did it ever occur to anyone that the economy would have been, you know, much better to sustain itself and our people here and provide for our retirement and education and getting government out of all this stuff, that we would be a far better. In fact, we were. That's what made America so vibrant, so rich, was the protection of individual rights and property rights and so on. Instead of this, once we got to be so prosperous, then everybody went into a position to get their goodies and keep taking from us to where we have what we have now. But that solution is never even approached. It's always about you pick the worst parts of where our money is going and saying, see how bad this is? Do you see how unjust this is? You see the violation of human rights right here? Yes, I do. I think they should stop violating my human rights and quit taking my money to go over there. And you go, oh, no. We want them to take your money. We just want to do something else with it.
No, well, just to have peace in the Middle East, we don't have to take anybody's money. You know, we have to stop giving money. The fact that we are giving money, putting money into the Middle East, is the reason that, I mean, is the reason that's causing trouble in America, is causing trouble with American taxpayers. It's free to say no. It's free to stop. Don't give Egypt money. Don't give Israel money. Okay? That doesn't cost anything not to give them money. Use that money here at home. But by allowing this money to go to these countries that don't respect human rights from the get-go, it's useless, it's pointless, and it's a waste.
No. I'm with you on that. But I mean, when you say use it at home, I'm saying when you say home, I don't mean the U.S. or through Washington. I mean at home and at my address.
Yeah.
I mean, stop taking my money. And I tell you, I just want to share that with you so you can understand the frustration I have I get people from all over the world. I have them from Indonesia. They come in there, live for years in Afghanistan, Iraq, and it's always from a progressive ideology. ideology that the money being spent over there is bad money, and it's bad that we are giving it to Washington to spend over there, but it would be good to take it from me if they spent it over here on what you wanted. And I'm going, it's bad to steal it from me to begin with, and it solves so many of these problems and creates a much, you know, more vibrant economy that can sustain itself and the people that are in need. I mean, much more than anything going through Washington. But, you know, so I'm glad we were able to make that point, and hopefully you got to make yours. When we come back, I want to go ahead and start focusing on life there, because you did spend some time over there, and I want to get what daily life is like. How do you travel from the West Bank into Israel proper? You know, what kind of documents do you need? Why would they let anybody go? Who do they let go? Can you open a business? Do they just want to starve the people out? What is the game plan there in Israel that we are funding? We're going to find out with Khalilah Sabra when we come right back here on Declare Your Independence.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Well, I'm a believer. Yeah, we're on the eve. You know, and if you're in the Middle East and you're on the wrong side of some wall, you might have a feeling that you're on the eve of destruction, too. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I have on the line Khalilah Sabra. Am I saying that right, Khalilah?
Yes, right.
Khalilah Sabra, and you're, you know, with a campaign to end Israeli occupation, and you recently wrote a piece, Top 10 Reasons for Skepticism on Israeli-Palestinian Talks. You know, it was published in the Huffington Post. And so you don't have a whole lot of confidence in whatever it is Obama's doing, but, you know, I really wanted to get a perspective of life there. Because the one question that I have is, as I talk to people that certainly from Afghanistan, if they've done relief work and such there, they go, you know, even Afghanistan doesn't have like a national identity. They don't have a, you know, a national soccer team they all root for or any of that stuff. They're different right. tribes and ethnicities and so on. They're like, you know, what map maker drew this line? I mean, it's some English and French thing after World War I or whatever. And they go, you know, this is crap. You know, these people don't have anything in common with each other, much less, you know, as someone in Lebanon or in Palestine or Jordan or Iraq or what. So I'm wondering, as you travel around the Middle East, the only thing they really have in common is a common enemy, us and Israel or something. What else distinguishes them as being connected in some way?
Well, I think Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, there are more things that they have in common than differences, and I think that's the thing that connects them. And basically, even if you travel to Israel, everyone's eating the same food. They may have they tweak the recipe here and there, but it's basically the same food. And amongst the Orthodox Jews, the lifestyle is not so different than Orthodox Muslims live. And I think, but the thing is that they have politically, one has been so marginalized over the other that they just can't get along. Israel is, if you're a Jew living in Israel, you live very, very well. You have a good job, you have excellent housing, you have social and political mobility, but if you have the bad luck of being born a Palestinian, you're immediately marginalized. You're not going to have the same education. You're not going to have the same health care. You're not going to be able to live with the same kind of accommodations. And you are a second-class citizen in the same way that that blacks live under in the apartheid in South Africa, in the same way that black Americans lived here prior to civil rights legislation. You are, from birth, unequal. So how would we expect for someone that's nurtured and evolves in that type of environment, How do we expect for them to behave? You have checkpoints. You cannot, if you have a relative living in Jerusalem, 10 minutes away is Ramallah, but there's a wall that separates. You cannot, it's like entering a different country. You are not allowed to pass.
Okay, tell me how that works. I'm in Palestine. I mean, it used to be Palestinians had jobs in Israel. Do they anymore?
If they have jobs, if they can obtain a special, like a work authorization to work in cities like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, if they have a work authorization to get past that checkpoint, then they will be allowed to get through. Sometimes they have to sit at the borders, sit at these checkpoints for 3-4 hours just trying to get through, to get 15 minutes by car. But you have to spend 3 to 4 hours at a checkpoint.
Okay.
And then sometimes you're turned away.
Tell me why. I mean, it seems that it's antagonistic and intentionally. Is there a real security threat? Are they paranoid, afraid? Is it made up? Is it just to antagonize them into wanting to leave? Are they trying to kill them out? I mean, what?
To make them want to leave. Now, if Palestinians had a way to live, if they had some type of life, liberty, and some kind of pursuit of happiness, then there would not be an intifada. There would not be suicide bombings. If a man has a reason to live, he's not going to want to die.
But there would be Palestinians on the Holy Land that we must purge from our midst, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, I can see where this is going. You know, you have the policies are making it very clear. They do not want Palestinians living, you know, on the West Bank. They don't want them in Gaza. They don't want them in Golan Heights. They don't want them there. They want to build their own little settlements and kind of, you know, just, I don't know, discourage them and have them go somewhere or just die off. I mean, you know, this embargo.
They made that very clear. They've made that very clear. They've never been hypocritical about that point. They don't want Palestinians there. They want a separate state that only allows for Jews. And that means even they don't want Palestinian Christians. They want they want a separate state for Jews, even though the religious sites there should not be decided by anybody. It should be a free area so that everyone can go there and do their religious requirements and make their pilgrimage. But the way that the Israeli government is conducting the situation, everyone else has to go, and only a certain people are allowed to stay. That's not a democracy.
They'll have the money changers at the walls in the gate to Jerusalem, and they get to charge their money. Okay, I can see, you know, where this would go in the future. And then you have the next Messiah comes in, turns over the money changers' tables, and get out of my house. So then you got a whole nother generation of stuff going on. So I can see where this goes. Ouch, quit it, back and forth, and I just got to ask a question. If the Israeli government, Zionist, you know, the people, that whoever is, you know, behind all this, said, you know what, this is what we want. We want all Palestinians, all Muslims, everybody. We want it just a Jewish state with the borders of, do they even concede what those borders are? Is it the occupied territories? If they got everybody out of the, are they done? Or they want all of Jordan, Egypt, Lebanon, southern Lebanon? Is there more that they want? Is that what they want? What do they want?
They want parts of Lebanon, too, because they believe that that they are entitled to that land, and they want part of Syria because they feel that they have a religious entitlement over that land. But the fact is, as far as two states are concerned, they already have two states, okay? That's why you have, and the Palestinians that are existing in the occupied territory, those that aren't there, they've already gone into Syria and they've gone into Lebanon. They live in Kuwait where they're not giving citizenship. So they are achieving their goal slowly but surely, and a two-state solution will only allow them to further that goal. Pretty soon, I mean, they want all of the West Bank. You know, they are still building settlements as we speak, and our president is not really addressing the issue. You know, it's easy to pretend like you may be a little bit annoyed or indifferent. But the fact is he's not creating a scenario where there's going to be a real difference and we're going to continue to spend that money in the Middle East.
Well, I just want to know what it is that would satisfy them. I mean, they already got, you know, Israel, you know, in 48, 49, boom, we got Israel. We're done. Well, we're not happy with this. We need a little bit more. We're not happy with that. We need a little bit of this. And we're not happy. I just wondered what it was that would make them happy. Because I'm, you know, if I just had to put a dollar amount on this thing, I'm going, all right, you know, we talked to Josh and he's saying that we got a deal with Israel between now and 2018, $30 billion. I'm going, $30 billion would buy you some peace if you put it in the right place. I mean, not that I'm advocating stealing from me, but I'm just going, it just seems stupid to keep this forever perpetuating war on itself. And this, it seems like it's just creating the problems to have the problems to create them so you can fund more of solving the problem in perpetuity. I'm just, something else is going on here. And my point is, let me finish my point. My point is that if they said, here's the line, we want this much of southern Lebanon, this is how much we want to Jordan, this is how much we want to Syria. You give this to us, we go through the world, we forever will never complain ever again, and you can put and build this nice big billions of dollar kind of state for all the Palestinians left and here and that, and peace will rule the planet. And I'm going, yeah, would I believe that? Is there something else? Is that it? Is that all they want is just land?
There's always going to be something else. You can't allow anybody that kind of entitlement. You do, they're going to ask for more and more and more. I mean, look how hard it was, look how difficult it was to get the Israelis out of Lebanon. And now they're threatening the borders with Syria, and they're picking fights with Iran and everywhere else. The thing is that we've got to stop as a country. It's very difficult for us to go over there and tell them exactly what they should do. We can tell them what the humanitarian thing to do, but we have no power over there. We've allowed them to run the show. So all we're doing is feeding it with our money. What we can do is stop feeding it with our money.
I'm definitely for stop feeding it with I'm for stop taking it from me, my money. That's what I'm for.
But at the same time,
well, they're going to push the button on us. When we come back, we'll let Kalila Sabra. Sorry, I messed up your name, but we'll let you finish your thought when we come back. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. I have Kalila Sabra on, and she advocates for, stopping occupation in Israel of what? I mean, what is Israel occupying that is somebody else's? Are they laying claim to it? It's ours? Or are they saying, oh, it's theirs, we're just, you know, out of protection? I mean, how are they claiming this land?
When you're building settlements, you're claiming it is yours. When you are built bulldozing homes, you're claiming it is yours. And what I wanted to say that even though, you know, America historically been one of the most powerful nations on earth, and it historically been one of the most respected nations on earth. So we do have some obligation to stand up what's right and denounce the wrongs that we see, and that's what we should be doing in that part of the world. We should be denouncing occupation, be denouncing that Palestinians be treated as second-class citizens. We are funding the occupation. We are funding settlements. We are enabling the building of weapons of mass destruction with money that would be better used for solving the problems we have right here in this country. People don't have health insurance. One of the most advanced countries of the world, people don't even have health insurance because we're funding a war machines. This is ridiculous.
Kalila,
their intention is. I don't know what the Israelis want, but we are not obligated to give it to them, and it needs to stop.
And you know, and this is where the argument starts to get muddy, is that when you say, quite correctly, we shouldn't be stealing from my grandchildren or me to fund this war machine or this occupation, all this other stuff. We should be stealing from you to do this other thing that you want to do. And I'm just going to be an advocate for human rights. You lose the moral high ground when you do that. Certainly with me.
No, but But that's not what everybody is saying. That's not what
that's
every
what
advocate
saying.
Is saying.
That's what
First
I'm saying.
First of all, you're being taxed more and more and more because your money is expected to pay for the war machine. If there's no expectation there, there's no demand for higher taxes. We certainly have enough in this country to make do. But we have so much responsibility for places elsewhere, and usually we shouldn't be a lot of in those places elsewhere, that's what's taking out of the American financial pot. That's what's pressing the bank accounts of American citizens, because we are spending money on money where we shouldn't be spending money. We shouldn't be building fighter jets for a country to make war on another country. That's not our business, and certainly isn't a humanitarian responsibility. We should be enforcing peace, and we can do that by closing those accounts. If we close those accounts, there's enough money for everyone to live well. There's enough money for all our children to go to university, everyone to have national health care. But as long as we do that, then it's useless. We're just wasting our time.
I just want you to know, I hear you, I understand your position, and but every time you say that, the only thing I can say, we have a duty, certainly as the philosophy and the founding of this country, the whole purpose of government was the defense of individual rights, not to be the aggressor, the oppressor, the stealer. You know, theft by government still theft. I'm as every time you say anything about what we shouldn't be doing, I'm with you, but you know, it's that you're not advocating for the highest morality, which is the defense of the smallest minority, which is the individual, me. Stop stealing from me. You can never advocate for any of these programs you're talking, even domestically, without violating my human rights of being stolen from by a shiny badge and always available gun behind it to do it. So I'm just going, while I'm with you on that, it's just that whenever I have someone that I can agree with on all of the heinous things that's being done in my name, being done with my money, and having a responsibility as a powerful nation is, you know, this collective mentality that somehow I got somebody speaking for me. I tell you how I want to speak. I want to speak with my money. When Sally Struthers gets up and says how, you know, this Ethiopian kid's starving and should need, I should have the ability and certainly the moral education and responsibility as an individual to do what I want with my money. And I even got an administration that says, should I help, you know, the Red Crescent, or should I help, you know, philanthropically with organizations that, you know, occasionally to Muslims, or I think that there is an injustice being done in Afghanistan or Iraq, and I want to help. All of a sudden, I wind up in Guantanamo. That should be a focus. That's a human right that I'm being denied. So, but to say that, you know, it's okay to steal the money from me, you're already a human rights violator.
I see what you're saying, but you know, I think the thing that where we disagree is that all of the taxes, what we have to pay for taxes, that's not necessarily money that's been stolen. We do have a responsibility to facilitate growth in this country, to enable everyone to pursue the American dream.
By leaving them alone, by providing equality under the law, by making sure no one gets special or preferential treatment, by upholding of law.
Though.
Of course it doesn't.
In the best of possible worlds, we would have equal opportunity for everyone, but that's even in spite of our laws, even in spite of our justice movements, we have not achieved that, okay? We have not achieved equality for every person in this country. It's still a work in process. So until we're able to achieve equity, and until we're able to assure that everyone has at least the ability, has the option of getting an education and getting a good job, we're always going to have some programs that we have to contribute to.
See, this is where, you know, I hope we're not talking past each other. I mean, we're just have a different perspective on this.
We are a brother's keeper. I mean, we agree on that. We are a brother's keeper.
Well, whether you are or not, if you got Christ going to Caesar saying, make him be his brother's keeper with your legions, you kind of lost the morality of advocating for the rights of the smallest minority, the individual. I mean, what you're saying. We should have, Caesar should put a lance to your chest and make you give your money for this, whatever the heck the program is, so that we can redistribute.
America's living in a dream. America thinks just because they elected a black man that lives in the White House right now that we've achieved some type of equality. Well, you know what? President Obama did not live like the average black man, okay? He went to Harvard. How many black men go to Harvard, okay? His wife went to Harvard. How many families, how many black families do you see where both parents went to Harvard, okay? He has had things that the average, not just black, but the average American doesn't have access to. So it's a little bit early for us to be patting ourselves on the back. If you go to different districts and you see how schools are funded by the tax dollars, if you're living in a poor neighborhood, your school's not going to get the same type of funding that the school in Bel Air is going to have. There has to be a way that we deal with that.
Yes, stop stealing from people.
Stop
stealing from people. See, you're not going to ever get, you're looking at the education in Harlem versus Beverly Hills.
What do you define as stealing from people?
Government has a gun to my head saying, guess what's in your wallet? A bunch of it's mine. That's stealing. You know, see, you're looking at Israel. You're looking at Jerusalem. You're looking at the occupation of Palestine. You're looking at our policy in Afghanistan. You're looking at our money going in the military-industrial complex. You're looking at all of these injustices that are going around. And then you can make the exact same argument for what's happening in the inner cities or in certain poor states or communities here in America and make exactly the same argument and say, look, the money that's going here isn't being done the way I want. I want to spend it better over there. And I'm going more holistically from the beginning, saying it's not the proper role of government to become the looter, the stealer, the king's men with the always available gun behind them and the authority of some piece of parchment paper that comes up and says, your money's now ours and we're going to do fill in the blank with it. I'm going, that is where the problem is. And you think it's not proper allocation of that money and never address, I mean, how much can they take? All of it? What is too much? I mean, it's render unto Caesar that which is Caesar and God's God's. And I just got to ask the question, is there anything that's not Caesar's?
The problem is, even though this system is not perfect, it's a hell of a lot better than a whole lot others, and that's why we keep it. The problem is we haven't refined it enough so it does justice to everybody, but it's probably doing a lot more justice here than in other countries of the world. We're between a rock and a hard spot, but at the same time, we are America. We don't allow people to starve. At least we shouldn't.
I think we want the same thing. I mean, I have to share this with you. I was talk show host on Air America affiliate here for a long time. They're token libertarian. And of course, so I'm familiar with the arguments from the progressives on the left and so on. And the one thing that I found is that a lot of times we have the same goal. We want to have more, higher standard of living. We want more education. We want more opportunity. We want equal treatment under the law. That's what we want. The method by which we go at it is a lot of times different, but I don't see a difference between a progressive and a conservative or a socialist or a fascist or whatever, because they all feel the justification to be able to steal my property. It's just what they're going to spend it on. And I'm going, whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, the whole purpose of government and decorates, that's why it's Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. It's about, you want to know how to define a bad government. It's when they're stealing from you. The whole purpose of government, defense of individual rights. When they're not doing that, it's time to alter or abolish. And I advocate for not stealing. So I just want to extract you from the same cloth, cut of cloth, as the bad guys on the other side, so that you can join the freedom movement and we can all be equal under the law. Thanks a lot, Kalila Sabra. I hope you had your opportunity to express yourself, and we've given out your information. The U.S. campaign to end Israeli occupation. Look it up. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back with my thoughts in the last hour.